Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome back to Political Talk with Tanbir, with your host, Tanbir. Today's a special episode because I'm joined and I'm co-hosting it with a good friend and amazing activist. You know him as the hip-hop artist, social justice activist, and publicist, Awkward. Thank you for joining me, man. It's an honor. How are you doing today?
Thanks for having me, man. I'm as good as can be given all the stuff that's happening around us.
Right. I feel that because, you know, it's kind of angering when you watch it happen, but you weren't there to try and do anything about it from my angle. I'm sure yours too.
Certainly.
So before we start, I just want to remind everyone out there, today is primary day for New York and Kentucky. There are a lot of progressives in Kentucky. There's Charles Booker. And over here, there's a series. There's a huge slate of progressives running. So fingers crossed, go out, vote if you haven't voted by mail or early. Wear your mask when you do so and just maintain social distancing. Now, to start us off, I don't have to remind you of current events happening around us right now with policing, social disparities, and tensions, but that's what we are here to discuss today. So I want to ask you, you and I both, I think it was sometime around yesterday evening, we saw the same article you sent to me. Minneapolis is looking to test a new algorithm to, quote-unquote, separate out the bad cops. I just wanted to, like, give you the floor to share your thoughts on that as well as to give reason to why that algorithm would not suffice.
Sure. Reform doesn't work, period. We've seen this time and time again. It's, you know, a neoliberal attempt at, you know, calming people down. It's not a solution. It's not designed to fix the greater problem. You can't just get rid of some bad apples, so to speak. In fact, you can't just defund the police. There is a system in place that is doing exactly what it was designed to do, and that is to keep people who were former slaves predominantly, but anyone who isn't rich and white, separated from the rest of society. Certain groups of people in this country are criminalized. They are targeted and they are incarcerated and beaten and murdered on the streets and in their own homes. And so using science and data to try to do what should be really pretty obvious, if you're a racist or a wife beater or, you know, a killer, you shouldn't be a cop. That's not going to solve the problem. And, you know, in addition to abolishing police and abolishing prisons, there are a lot of different societal things that would need to change, such as putting all of that funding, the billions of dollars that go into, police departments and prisons, into education, into healthcare, mental health, things like that, so that we can create a society along with new structures for justice that are around restorative justice and reparation instead of vengeance. These are the kinds of things that would actually create change.
Right. I definitely agree. And I'm also glad you brought up abolishing prisons, because that was actually my next point, my next question. So the United States, we account for just account for 4% of the world population, yet we also account for a whole quarter of the world's prison population.
Right.
We have over 2 million people in prison. And a lot of times those that come out, they only end up going back because that's kind of how it's built against them, you know?
Yes.
And then each prisoner on average costs around $30,000 yearly, in some states even up to $70,000. So imagine that, those two numbers, 2 million plus just multiplied by 30 to 70,000. And then private prisons also have stocks. So they're literally business investments to some people. So I definitely condemn private prisons and I support the notion to abolish it. But I basically just wanted to ask you what your angle is on it, like as similar as it is to mine. Just lay out your reasons and express your thought.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the first thing is, abolishing private prisons, certainly. But it also goes further than that. We need to eliminate all contracts with private prison corporations or corporations. I'm sorry, not private prison corporations, but corporations that provide commodities to prisons. It's not just private prisons that profit off of incarceration. There are tons of companies from, you know, from food companies to phone companies that, you know, either use prison labor at slave wages, you know, 4 cents an hour, or provide, you know, measly food to inmates, or provide overpriced, price gouging telephone services to incarcerated people. And so all prisons as they exist today should certainly not be a profit opportunity for any corporations or any rich people. Beyond that, I believe we should immediately abolish the death penalty. We're one of the only so-called developed nations in the world that still has the death penalty. And we should also get rid of solitary confinement, which is been proven to be, you know, incredibly detrimental. You know, initially when prisons became the modus operandi, or, you know, the way that we deal with crime or lawbreakers, the term penitentiary came to be because it was designed to be for people to, you know, commit to penitence and to be rehabilitated. Only as we saw with the 1994 crime bill, the part of that bill saying that we couldn't use Pell Grants to educate incarcerated people, that's just one of many examples that show that the purpose of prisons is by no means to have people be sorry or get better or come out and be a functioning member of society. It's to house as many people we can, particularly poor people and Black and brown people and Indigenous people, you know, as we possibly can, and make as much money off of them as we can. So to me, those are the immediate steps that need to be taken. But additionally, there should be absolutely no new prisons, no new funding to any prisons to build prisons or repair prisons. There should be, you know, all local jails should be closed. Bail, you know, there should be no cash bail. And so there's a lot of steps we can take right off the bat. Further, if we decriminalize drug users and decriminalize addiction, if we decriminalize sex work, if we decriminalize immigration, you know, a ton of people will not be in prison. We should expunge, you know, all nonviolent drug arrests, especially for marijuana. If we legalize marijuana and give the money made from legal marijuana to the communities most harmed by the removal of so many members of society, you know, into prison for nonviolent marijuana offenses, we would be benefiting those communities and developing programs that, instead of, you know, the school to prison pipeline, designing, you know, the society and their communities to go from school to prison, we would be building up these communities. We'd empty out the jails and the prisons. And then we can move further, you know, toward full abolition. But there's a number of steps we can take right away that are totally doable. They're not radical at all. It just requires an acknowledgement that, one, this is something that was designed for profit. Two, that it's racist and classist, and three, that we don't have to think about crime and punishment the way we do today.
Right. You brought up a lot of points I would love to talk on to. Not sure if we have the time to, but I'll try. First one I did want to bring up was, you brought up solitary confinement, and I do agree that that method should be abolished. In New York City, we had Kalief Browder, you know, 16 years old. He was taken to Rikers Island and held in solitary confinement for 3 years without trial over the alleged theft of a backpack. And eventually, you know, that for a 16-year-old, that does mental harm, and it led to suicide. So it's insane. It's inhumane.
Absolutely.
And you also brought up the crime bill. I wanted to ask you, so, you know, I'm gonna get a little political here with the presidential elections. Joe Biden, he's proud of writing the crime bill that we talk about today. And also on his top vice president list is Kamala Harris. So when we talk about prison labor and stuff, you know, as head prosecutor and attorney general, she blocked evidence in many trials that would have freed innocent people. She kept people beyond their sentences. They finished their sentences and she still kept them there to use as cheap labor. So like you said, 4 cents an hour, petty change like that. She kept them there for prison labor for the state of California. So if it comes down to a Biden-Harris ticket, you don't have to have a definite answer yet. But if that were the ticket on the Democratic ballot today, given the options, how would you vote?
I'm not going to answer until I'm 100% certain that that is my only option. There has been a realization about the Green Party that there is a lot of open corruption and that Howie Hawkins is not really a viable candidate. So I don't believe that the Green Party is an option. You know, I don't really believe, as Joe Biden said, anything will significantly change from the world we live in today if we elect him, and that's not a good thing. I certainly do not want to vote for Joe Biden. Kamala Harris has done so many other things that, you know, we don't even have time to mention. The two of them are maybe like in my time, like by far the worst Democratic ticket that I've ever experienced. I'm still hoping for a miracle. I voted for Bernie Sanders in New York and all of his delegates, and I put a lot more emphasis and priority on down ballot progressives because I do think that very little is going to change. On the other hand, like, you know, Angela Davis said, while I, you know, this is kind of restating what she said, but not quoting verbatim, you know, I do not support Joe Biden, but I will vote for Joe Biden. So if on the day of, you know, if on election day, that's my only option, I do think that Trump is the worst president we've had in the modern era. I believe that he's an actual Nazi. I know he's the son of a Nazi. I know he called the people who murdered Heather Hare very fine people. He's doing things that even Biden wouldn't do. They're both rapists. They're both racists. But, you know, would Joe Biden be telling people to go out and get COVID because they're mad they have to wear masks and stay home? I don't think so. Would he be telling you know, right-wing extremists to go infiltrate protests and beat people who are on opposing political sides? I don't think so. You know, Trump, I don't even think his beliefs are important. He knows what his base is, and they're white supremacists. And I don't, you know, he never should have been elected in the first place. And in fact, he wasn't popularly elected, which brings us to another topic we don't have time for, but we should be able to elect our president. And in this case, it would have been Hillary, who's not wonderful either, but she's not Donald Trump. So long story short, I don't want to say, I want a miracle because there's a million people who'd be better than Joe Biden. But no one's worse than Donald Trump.
That's true. And again, you know, we're both in New York, so I cast my ballot for Bernie Sanders, his delegates, and Shaniette Chowdhury, the congressional candidate for my district. So, you know, it's kind of sad that once again we're given two options we don't want. And this is my first presidential election where I can vote. I don't know. I'm willing to vote for Joe Biden. I think I'm committed to vote for Joe Biden despite my dislike for him right now. But that's given I don't know his running mate. I'll pretty much be fine with any of the top contenders except for Kamala Harris. If she is to be his running mate, I honestly don't see myself voting for that ticket. I'd probably just exercise the write-in option. because it's just in good conscience. You know, I can't just vote because there's a D next to the name.
It's hard, man, because, you know, I voted for Ralph Nader years ago. You know, I'm a radical, like, you know, I'm lefter than left. And I believe that so much change is necessary for a just, equal, civil, humanist society. But at the same time, I'm a realist, and, you know, I can't imagine another 4 years of Trump. I think if the solution, well, not, it's not a solution. If the options are, it stays the same and we continue to revolt and force change, you know, things are happening for the positive every day as a result of all of our efforts pushing, you know, to put Black lives, you know, to say that Black lives matter, to, you know, to abolish police and prisons. I want change to happen more quickly. But even the symbolic gestures of statues toppling, this is a momentous time in our nation's history, and I'm proud to be a part of it. You know, but if it's were to stay the same from a presidential perspective or the greater societal perspective, and we on the streets and, you know, on the grassroots can make change happen, I'd be way more satisfied with that than what 4 more years of Trump might mean. I don't think it would stay the same. I think it would get worse. I, you know, and then, like I talked about with my friend Justin Hunt, also known as the Company Man, in an interview recently, there's another way of looking at it, which is maybe we want Trump and 4 more years. Maybe we want it to get so bad that revolution is literally impossible. So that's a whole nother way to look at it. It's certainly not convenient. It's not luxurious. Like, revolution is not enjoyable, but it is the only thing that's going to work. And so maybe Trump should win. You know, I just refuse to say I want to vote for Joe Biden as much as I may decide I have to.
Right. I definitely understand that. And real quickly, the way I saw it when the DNC pushed Biden, I basically said they probably want to maximize on 2 terms of Trump so he could do as much damage as he can. So in 2024, they could come up and say they've been opposing him for 8 years and come out as the White Knights. We don't know what's going to happen yet. But I also wanted to bring up, so ever since, you know, we brought up protests and statues coming down several times. They worked, though. George Floyd's murderer, he was arrested and is being charged with second-degree murder. The cops with him were arrested. Right. Breonna Taylor's case is being opened back up. However, you know, it's obviously far from done. And also another thing that really irked me is one of the officers involved in Floyd's death was released on a $1 million bail too. That's an insane amount. So I wonder who gave that money to
white supremacists.
And so basically, how do you feel about the bailing concept, about cash bail, monetary bails in the justice system of the United States?
That's a great question in the context in which you put it. You know, I'd like to see this magical thing happen where when a cop murders somebody, we just know it to be true with 100% certainty, and they can be locked in a hole forever because they took advantage of the power that was given to them and used it for evil. While I'd like to see even rapists and murderers who have been put through hell in their lives and not given any programs or healthcare or anything to succeed in this world be treated differently and be, you know, taught, you know, how to, you know, be responsible for their actions and actually become a better person. You know, so as someone who's a prison abolitionist and, you know, believes that we should abolish the police, the answer of cash bail and the answer of imprisonment, even for cops, cannot be the solution. So you can't have it both ways. I believe that in the current system, the fact that he only got second degree murder charges instead of first degree is problematic. I think the fact that it took us protesting is symbolic, emblematic of the system, you know, we live in, where it's almost impossible to get justice when it's a cop killer, or I should say a killer cop. You know, and I think that having to reopen Breonna Taylor's case when it is so cut and dry, while, you know, they tried to incarcerate her boyfriend for exercising his Second Amendment rights in his own home. And where was the NRA then? Nowhere, because he was Black. You know, I think we really have to take a look at the larger system. And in the system that we currently live in, you know, he should get first degree and he should be held without bail. I don't believe in cash bail, period, outside of prison abolition, simply because it indiscriminately impacts poor people, which then indiscriminately impacts those who are most criminalized in police, which is people of color. So there shouldn't be cash bail, because there are, you know, an insane percentage of people in jails across this country have never been convicted of a crime. And as you said of Khalif Browder, and there's so many others, they sometimes never get out at all. And so that's not what this Constitution says, that we have a right to a fair trial. On that note, like, public defenders are completely overworked. So there needs to be a limitation on their caseload so they can actually try to help the people they're representing.
Care, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
So in an ideal world, we have no prisons, and we deal with cops who kill the same way we would deal with anyone else. But in that ideal world, there's no cops either. We have, you know, situations where communities are, you know, handling their own situations, where cops are not necessary anymore. You know, communities where the cops are coming in from other neighborhoods and policing, you know, people of color, they're not going to be there to create the problems. Without broken windows policing and all of the other petty crimes that people are arrested and incarcerated for, there won't be as many needs for bail for any of this stuff. So as long as everyone else gets screwed, I want the cops to get screwed the same. But in an ideal world, we wouldn't treat any of these crimes the way we are now.
Right. And also, you know, the broken windows theory, it's like, you know, one small crime leads to bigger crime. It just basically encourages cops to just go out and keep trying to find what's not there, even if it's not there.
And so many departments admit to racial profiling. Then you look at the statistics of stop and frisk. You know, it's certain people.
I was just going to bring that
up. Certain people who are criminalized. It's certain people who get the shit beaten out of them, and the cops have impunity. There are certain people who get higher sentences, like what happened to Ramsey Orta, where they stacked his sentences to try to put him away for longer. You know, all of this is intentional, racist, and classist.
Right. And like you said, stop and frisk. I was just going to bring that up. You know, we live in New York City. I think I'm too young to know the impact it had, but, you know, my parents and even my older friends, you know, the terror it caused in communities. And also another thing, you know, the NYPD, it's a heavy policing force, and for a policing force that does take on community policing, because that's the NYPD's policing model, apparently, community policing, it's you know, so many, there's like a massive population of cops and detectives and NYPD that don't even live in New York City. They live in Nassau and Suffolk County.
So, and what they mean by community policing, which also has proven not to work. Like, you don't want to elect community members to become police either. You want to remove the concept of police and create systems that enable there not to be a need for police. But what they mean by community policing isn't even the neoliberal or good intentioned concept of people in their own communities policing each other and themselves. It is literally policing certain communities.
Right. So that's about as much time as I have today, but I definitely, you know, I want to continue this talk. So be on the lookout. I definitely want to have you back on So, because, you know, this isn't a topic that you could just cover in one day.
And we could talk about, you know, I think some, you know, ways that we can move in positive directions, you know, the ways that we can decriminalize schools, you know, how we can use hip hop music, which is something that I do, to empower, you know, and inspire the youth. There's so many things that we can talk about that are positive that we can, you know, use to change the situation we're in now.
Right. So definitely, you know, you're welcome on here anytime. It was a great opportunity to sit here. That concludes this interview. To everybody listening, be sure to visit and follow him, Awkward, on Twitter at Awkward Rap. That's Awkward with an O. I'll write it out in the bio of this episode so you can refer to it. Also, follow me on Twitter at It's Tunbeer C. Subscribe to Political Talk with Tunbeer on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Share it. Thank you again very much. I enjoyed this. Again, I will invite you back on. There's a lot more to discuss. I wish you a safe and enjoyable week.
Same to you, man.
Fingers crossed for the New York and Kentucky primaries, because, again, you and I both are down-ballot progressive supporters, and New York has an amazing slate of progressive candidates this election
cycle. Yeah, absolutely, and we got to get Booker in there, man. We got to get McConnell out.
Yeah, Booker. Yeah, we have to get Booker in there to beat both Mick's, McConnell and McGrath, pro-Trump Democrat. That's a different topic I'll save for another time. So have a safe and great week, everyone. Enjoy.